It sure is, and it's our final hour to go now with phone calls with Jim Mars, the Trillion Dollar Conspiracy. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Jim, I got a couple interesting emails from some young folks, 24 years old, 25, and they said, and they agree with what they're hearing tonight, but they want to know what can they do at their age in order to fight back.
Exactly. Before I answer that, I want to just say quickly one thing about Joe the caller. He seemed to feel like I was disparaging the President of the United States when I called him by his proper name, Barack Hussein Obama. All right? That's his name. Okay? Now, but is it, this shows us something about subtle mind control. Because apparently, if you call somebody by their proper name, then you must be talking about some evil or suspicious person like Mark David Chapman, James Earl Ray, Lee Harvey Oswald. You know,
John Wilkes Booth,
John Wilkes Booth. So, you know, where's that coming from? I
George
mean,
W. Bush.
we call George W. Bush. So, you know, what's the problem here? And that leads me to, I heard this the other day, and it is so apropos, and this is where I'm coming from. It's just as racist to vote for somebody because of their race as it is to vote against somebody because of their race. I just want people to take that to heart.
And
Now,
didn't a lot of people also say William Jefferson Clinton?
of course. I mean, it's, you know, if I'd said Barack Looney Obama, yeah, okay. You know, that's all I did was say his name. Are we too sensitive? Are we being manipulated? Is this mind control? I don't know. But back to you, the question of the 20-somethings, this is what can we do about it? The first thing you can do is make yourself aware, arm yourself with knowledge. Okay, crass commercial plug, read my books, all right? But there's plenty of others. Read other people's books. Get on the internet. Quit messing around with Twitter and go start looking up history. Study the history of the Third Reich and how it came to be. Study the revolution in Russia. Study the French Revolution. Find out that these were all conspiracies. Okay? In fact, my line is, if it's not an act of God, it's a conspiracy. Yeah, cars crash, planes crash, ships sink. But if something happens and it's not an act of God, it's because somebody planned it that way. All right? So that is a conspiracy, and let's start from there. Now, what can they do about it? Well, here's a very broad concept. In the whole history of the world, nothing of any benefit has ever been accomplished by a mob or even a committee.
Nope.
It's always been individuals. In fact, in my study of the Third Reich, it's absolutely amazing. When Hitler first showed up at what was then the German Workers' Party, which he changed into the National Socialist German Workers' Party, you know how many people were there? 9 people. So from 9 people, Hitler was able to create the Third Reich, lead, you know, start World War II, you know, and all through history, it's been one person. On the good side, we've got Gandhi, Buddha, Jesus.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you got Stalin, Pol Pot, Hitler. It's
Mussolini.
always Mussolini. It's always one person. So don't buy into this idea that I'm just one person. What can I do? You can do a lot if you put your mind to it. But to begin with, you have to arm yourself. Or as Davy Crockett once said, first make sure you have the truth, and then push ahead. And so now, so more correctly, what can you do? All right? You can write letters to your editors of your newspaper and demand that they start printing the whole truth instead of corporate handouts and government pronouncements. You can contact your TV stations, radio stations, go on talk shows like yours, George, and speak out and say, look, here's what I know. Here's what I think. Everybody's, you know, everybody's got their beliefs, and everybody has the right to air their beliefs as long as you don't try to shout somebody out. And so then what else can you do? All right. Once you've read and studied and you have knowledge, then you can host meetings in your home. Call it a book review. a book study group, okay, and get some good book, and then say, now, what about this book? Is this true? Is it not? Where did it come from? What are the sources? You know, and start educating people. Now, don't preach to people. Nobody wants to be preached to, and you very rarely change anybody's mind by shouting, hollering, and preaching to them. What you do is you raise good questions. One that I find particularly effective is to simply ask somebody, well, you know what? If we're supposed to be afraid of Al-Qaeda, this huge international terrorist group, and they're trying to hurt us, and they're trying to slip weapons of mass destruction into our country, how come the government is doing nothing to secure the borders? And just get them thinking. Well, gee, why aren't they doing something? Well, we get them thinking and have study groups. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do. It's a very highly individualistic thing. George, you host a very, very powerful and important show on radio. I write some books, several of which ended up on the New York Times bestseller list. So we kind of have we got a leg up because at least we've got a microphone. But everybody can do something. And let me tell you something, folks. I'm not a total pessimist. I think at the end of the tunnel, we're going to come out a stronger, better nation. We're going to be kinder to each other. We're going to find out better ways of doing things, new energy sources. And I think everything's basically going to be okay. But between then and now, there's going to be some rough times, and you better start educating yourself and your family and your friends, your neighbors, and let's all be Americans. You know, red, yellow, black, white, liberal, conservative. Let's just agree to disagree, okay? But we don't have to do it disagreeably.
That's right, you loon. Let's go to Newport Beach, California. Go ahead, Joe. You're up.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, Joe.
And I love your books. I've read several of them. And my question was actually similar to the young people's emails, but I'm going to tweak it a little bit for you. I was asking, what do you recommend for people? I'm seeing that a lot of companies are seeming to pledge their allegiance to the New World Order, such as like Time Warner with their symbols, like the Eye of Horus and like Universal Music Group and a lot of different companies. And how do... like, if you try to make people aware of it, they don't always listen. And I was just wondering, how many of the employees of those, you know, different media companies and whatever, lots of different American companies, how many of them do you think are actually in the know of the their allegiance or their agenda? Or how many of these employees or celebrity endorsers are actual just pawns for it?
That's actually a pretty good question, and quite frankly, just based on my experience and my knowledge, I think that only a very few people within the giant corporations actually understand what the true program really is. I think everybody else is just either wanting to climb up the ladder, you know, they want to brown nose a little bit, they want to keep their jobs, and even mostly is they just don't know, and frankly, they don't really want to know. We have a whole nation in denial. It's almost as though, you know, we found out that your father is a serial killer. You don't want to know that. I don't want to know that. Just be quiet. We won't talk about that. Just we'll be quiet about that. And so I think as a nation, we are in denial. And I don't think that it's all totally voluntary. I know in the weeks and months following 9/11, I found myself it was kind of hard to sleep.
I was numb. Everybody was numb.
And I was kind of off my feet, and it suddenly dawned on me, I have been traumatized. You too, George, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
We all were.
Okay. Yeah. Now, if you'll go study on mind control and brainwashing, you find that the first thing that you have to do is break somebody down. You have to break down their individual ego. And the best and easiest way to do that is to traumatize them. That's why they take detainees and they strip them off and they put them in orange suits so they look like everybody else. And they put them in little rooms with the light on all the time, 24/7, play wild music, you know, and because they're breaking them down as individuals. And in fact, this is an old technique. This is the way the military's operated almost, you know, back to the Egyptians. When somebody goes in the military, you cease to be an individual. They shave your hair, they put you in the uniform so you look like everybody else, and they scream and holler at you, and they break you down as a free-thinking, independent individual. You become part of the herd, the team, the corps, whatever they want to call it. And, you know, and in a military situation, to be able to handle a large group like an army, that may be necessary. But that's why it is so important to, we need to understand what the fight's all about. And if we're going to dehumanize everybody and make them less than a free-thinking, free individual, then we have to make sure that the fight is worth it. And when it's self-defense, that's the fight is probably worth it. But when you go and occupy some third world country somewhere where no other empire has been able to impose their will, and yeah, I'm probably talking about Afghanistan. The Mongols tried to conquer Afghanistan. They couldn't do it. The British Empire tried to conquer Afghanistan. They couldn't do it. The Russian Empire tried to conquer Afghanistan. They couldn't do it. And I just don't understand why we seem to think that we can do it. And then when we have a general who faces up to the realities and starts making some disparaging remarks, and admittedly he may have made some remarks, you know, a little bit inappropriate, but nevertheless he was trying to do his job, he gets fired, and everybody's on the talking heads and politicians are all on the media talking about, no, we got to stick to the course, we got to win. Well, and all I can think of is win what? All right, what are we talking about, a win? Maybe a win would be if we installed our own little puppet government in Afghanistan. Would that be a win? Well, maybe, but it wouldn't last, because as soon as we pull our military out of there, they'd overthrow them, and they'd fall to fighting again. It'd go right back to the way it was in the beginning. I just don't understand it. What's a win? And that's what happens when you just blindly follow authority.
You know, I endorse the dismissal primarily because, you know, being in the Navy for 9 years, Jim, that at any point when the military starts to overrule or criticize the commander-in-chief, I think a change has got to be made.
And you have a real point there, George.
Yeah. I mean, regardless of whether the direction's right or not, or policy, it's not like President Obama was ordering our troops to do illegal things. There's a difference. You know, if you're in the military...
Well, of course, President Obama, you know, he didn't start that war anyway.
No, he didn't. Okay? But you know...
But he hadn't done anything to stop it either.
No, I agree. I mean, this is a continuation.
Yes, I agree with you. If we start letting military leadership dictate to our civilian leadership, we're on a really slippery slope.
Absolutely.
You know? But on the other hand, I got to say that when our own top military brass are questioning our mission, then perhaps we should really take a hard look at our civilian leadership and say, what exactly are you up to?
Sure. Well, don't we do that, though, every 4 years?
Yes, but now we're back to, do we really have a say-so? Right now, there's one company that controls about 80% of the touchtone computer voting.
I know it. And they're going to do more.
We don't know whether they're really answering to our...
Wait till we go to a telephone system where people won't even go to the voting booth. You'll just type in your Social Security number and vote over your phone. I bet it'll happen one day.
Yeah, and you know what? I was thinking this along the same lines, George, because there was recently, I think it was MSNBC, had some kind of poll on the Internet, okay? And you go there and you vote, and apparently they tag your computer ID or whatever. They know.
They get your IP. Yeah.
Yeah, and because then... If I've tried it a couple of times just to see if it worked, you know, go back in and see if I can vote again to overload the results.
Testing
and
it, are you?
I was testing it. I wasn't trying to actually alter a vote. I was just testing to see if you could, and no, you can't. That once you vote, you vote.
Yeah.
And you go back in, you go to that same website, you try to vote again, and it doesn't let you do it. So if they can do that for a simple poll, why can't they do that, you know, for a vote?
What that would do.
This convoluted system we have where you got to get a piece of paper, you got a key number, and you got to punch this, punch that, and you never know. Your vote goes off into the ether somewhere.
Of course, it would be the same way on the phone. You'd never know where it went.
That's true. That's what happens with all electronic stuff. That's why thank you. You prompted me to say something that I really need to say about my new book, The Terra Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy. In the past, one of the complaints I get, and I think it's valid, is that they say, Mars, you're always talking about all this bad stuff, and you're always telling us what's wrong, you know? What? And it's like the callers that did, or the emailed you. What do we do about it? So in this one, at the back section, I actually have talk about things we can do to correct the system and things we can do to make it better. And one of the things that I advocate is a return to paper ballots and poll watchers. Now, George, I know you know what a poll watcher is, but think about these young folks. Do they even know what a poll watcher is? Probably not.
No.
In fact, maybe I better educate them right now. A poll watcher is someone who is selected by a political party or a candidate or an advocacy group who, under law, is allowed to go to the polling place and stay there all day
and snoop around
and watch the votes.
Yep.
You know? And that would be a great benefit if we'd have people who are really care about freedom and liberty who would go and watch the polls and watch who brings in the machines, watch where the machines go. Better yet, let's go back to paper ballots so that if people say, well, you know, I went down and voted for this guy, and everybody I know voted for this guy, but he didn't get in, then have a vote recount. Go back in, count those votes again. That's what paper ballots are all about. We're in deep trouble here when it's all controlled by electronic blips that just kind of go off into the ether, and we don't know if our vote counted or not.
Let's go to Van Nuys, California. It's Bob's turn. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, wow, wonderful show and great guest.
Thanks.
Yeah, going back to the voting booth, actually, whenever I vote, I really look at the person hard and go, do you know where these ballot boxes are really going?
Do you ever get a reply?
No, well, they tell me exactly where they go, and I actually one night waited for them to get picked up to see if they're telling me the truth, and it was funny. They put them, like, under locks, and they had, like, a sheriff's department pick them up and take them to the Van Nuys airport out here. I go, oh, okay, well, that looks all right.
Well, wait, are you talking about paper ballots?
Yeah, this is paper ballots, yeah.
This is paper ballots. Well, that's true. I mean, even a return to paper ballots is not a guarantee. There was a famous, legendary scandal in Texas with Lyndon Johnson in Box 13, you know. And when they went back and counted the votes, they found that a whole lot of those votes were all in the same handwriting from the same pen. And so then when they went to court with it and ordered them to turn over Box 13 and they opened it up, and guess what? It was empty.
There have been voting impropriety since they started voting.
Exactly. And wow. So why anybody thinks that by turning our voting system over to a computer, which can be hacked, which is garbage in, garbage out, you know, I don't understand how anybody can actually buy into the idea that this is a safer way to vote.
Yeah, well, my question is about this. I just see this, I don't know, it just seems like I'm living a weird dream here. We have millions, tens of millions of people rushing this country from South America, and our government's just looking at it like, what's wrong with that? And not only that, but I hear in Arizona, 20 miles of Arizona is being given to drug lords by our government. They're putting signs up,
right.
Don't go here, this is drug lords' property. What the heck's going on? Why isn't the president bringing the armed forces down there and shooting these people for bringing in drugs? I don't mean the illegal immigrants trying to get jobs. There's truckloads full of armed military personnel with military weaponry entering our country illegally.
Absolutely.
Truckloads full of drugs.
Well,
we should immediately attack them.
And as we reported last week, police officers are being threatened, shot, beheaded
right
down that area.
Right. Now, excuse me, guys, but to me this sounds like a armed invasion.
It does. Jim, we're going to come right back. We're going to take final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Chris Impey joins us as we talk about how it ends from you to the universe. And then later on in the program, we may have Ed Dames join us, remote viewer. One of the things he may talk about, what's going on down there at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. What does he see through remote viewing? That'll be our next Coast to Coast show. When we come back, let's take final phone calls with Jim Mars, the author of The Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy. Jim, John in Santa Fe sends in a text, wants to know if you think New York City is a prime example of a globalist agenda because the mayor's a billionaire.
Well, you know, all I can say is that it's kind of interesting the amount of money that people spend to become a senator or a president or a mayor of a large city. Obviously, they expect to get something out of it. And back in the days of the old republic, it was because they were concerned citizens and they wanted to serve the public. And yet today, too often, we see people that go into these offices with very little money and come out as millionaires, as you well know. So I think that should undergo some very close scrutiny, because like the president, I'm forgetting exactly now what the president's salary is, but
400,000, 400,000,
400,000. I know they upped it some, but still 400,000. Hey, that's not a bad paycheck, still in all, they come out as millionaires. So where's the money coming from? What are the deals being cut? I mean, we see it all the time in novels and in the movies. You know, all the deals that are going on under the table. It's absolutely amazing. And, of course, this is because the zombie nation, we don't pay any attention. We don't pay. We just say, well, you know. And I've heard it for years, and I know you have too, George. Let Washington take care of it. Well, folks, they have, and it's not a pretty picture, is it? And that's another thing that I offer as a suggestion. Right now, senators and representatives are on something called the Federal Retirement Program, All right? I say get them all off that and make them have to live under Medicaid and Social Security like the rest of us, and just see how fast they clean it up.
You got it. Let's go now to the phones. We'll go to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Paul's been waiting. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight? I just want to say it was a really good show tonight. I just want to say real quick before I ask my question, I've been unemployed a little over a year now, to no fault of my own. I was laid off and been trying to find employment myself and many others here. Not only here in Harrisburg, but throughout the state of Pennsylvania, and it's like nearly impossible. And, you know, the unemployment thing was going well for a while, but then they stopped it. And I just wanted to ask your guest, you know, what he thought about the whole unemployment issue and about the millions, beyond the millions of Americans right now that don't have it, and do you think they will re-extend it again?
Right. Well, if you listen to President, shall I say his full name? I'll just say President Obama. The other night when he made his talk from the G20 meeting, he said that he's pledging to cut the deficit in half by 2012. Well, now, wait a minute. How are they going to cut the budget? There's really only two ways. And number one would be to cut that huge military budget. The euphemism is defense. We can cut the defense budget, or we can cut the social services. Well, guess what's going to get cut? This is what happens when you put the rich party in power.
You there, Paul?
Yeah, so you believe that they won't extend it, because, you know, you guys are talking about, you know, a revolution. I mean, you have people that's angry that can't pay their light bill. They don't know, you know, how they're going to afford groceries, this, that, and third. So if you just decide, well, you know what, we're not going to re-extend it, I mean, what are we to do? I mean, the employment is terrible right now, and, I mean, there's no source of income for any of us. So, I mean, like, what do we do? I mean, you know, you talk about a revolution. I mean, you have millions of angry Americans with no income, and they're talking about these gun laws now. I mean, like, what are we doing?
Well, okay, I hear you, and I hear your pain, too. And again, we went through this a little earlier in the program. I do not advocate a violent revolution. For one thing, the globalists, that's exactly what they'd love. They'd love for people to get out and start practicing violence, because that would give them the excuse to clamp down even further, take away further liberties. What we have to do is try to get organized. As I said earlier, there's more of us than there are of them. If we could ensure that there was a fair vote, and then we get everybody, you get all your friends, and you get everybody, you know, that's having a hard time, and you go and you work and you put somebody in office, either in your state, your city, or in Congress, who would care about what happens to you rather than what happens to the rich party, you could start turning things around.
Okay, back to the final calls now. Wilmington, Delaware, Robert East of the Rockies, you're on with Jim Mars. Go ahead, Robert.
George, how you doing?
Good, Robert. Thank you.
Jim, actually, I've been sitting here thinking, and I've been saying this to myself, and I'm probably going to go Tea Party, but is my vote really going to count? And let me explain why. You're sitting there talking about the word elite. Well, the people need to do is need to go after the word elite people and try to do and get them and get their names out there or something. Because if the word elite's taking over everything, we can't do anything. No matter who you put in there, they're going to pay them people off.
Right. Well,
see my point? And you're basically stuck.
Well, I hear you and I agree with you. And the problem's even worse than what you're articulating. Because, for instance, take Congress. If they don't buy you off, then they intimidate you out, okay? They have access to the security, to the surveillance systems, or they set you up. They find some way to blackmail you, all right? So half the Congress is on the payroll. The other half is cowed and intimidated and blackmailed into going along. And a handful who are trying to stand up, tell the truth, and do things for the betterment of the public, their plane crashes, or they are forced out, or the money is aligned against them. They can't buy enough television time, so they get voted out. One little rule of thumb might be that when you go down to vote for somebody, check out who's running and find out which candidate has the least amount of money, and that's probably the person you want to vote for.
And that'd probably be the one that loses.
And that'd be the one that loses because and it's just simple, folks. Today, it used to be in the old republic that you had to go out and go visit around in your precincts and in your voting districts, and you had to what they call stumping. Okay, they used to get up on the tree stump, and they'd actually meet with the people, and they'd hear what the people had to say and what their problems were, and then they'd say, "Well, I'll do something about this." Today, you never see these people; they only appear on television, and to get on television, and George, you know this better than anybody, you don't get television time for free. And in fact, if you're a politician, you have to pay up front, cash on the barrel head, because they don't want somebody who loses election and then say, "Well, I lost, I can't pay." So you have to pay up front. So the only way you get expensive television time is by either having a sugar daddy or selling out to one of the huge corporations. This is part of the problem.
We go to Bonnie Lake, Washington, west of the Rockies. John, good morning.
Hi. I'd like to bring up the fact that in 2007, in January, Javier Solana of the EU had a peace agreement made between Israel and the Palestinians and the Muslim nations, and it was up for review in June of this year, and how that Obama held off putting sanctions against Iran, and actually the sanctions were just approved by the EU this June. It is 3.5 years since that agreement was signed. This is a 7-year agreement. Now, Saudi Arabia has just given permission for the United States to fly, or for Israel. To fly over her airspace.
Yep.
And all of this adds up to one thing: the Great Tribulation, the War of Ezekiel 38-39, the latter years, the latter days. And I just wanted you to comment on it a little bit, if you would, please.
It does seem that way, doesn't it? That actually, what's happening is that they seem to be setting us up for a war with Iran. And of course, they've been pushing this for a long time, but it seems to be heating up even now. In fact, you know, they were being told that Iran is massing troops. As you said, Saudi Arabia has made a deal with Israel that they can fly through their airspace, and so it does. It's like
it's gonna happen, Jim. There's no doubt it's gonna happen. I even wonder if Ahmadinejad is paid off by the elitists to spout his rhetoric. You know, when he says we're going to take Israel and knock it off the face of the map, we're going to do this and that. I wonder if they're paying him to say that stuff. You never know.
Well, see, that's never know. There's a really great movie that's fixing to come out with Matt Damon called Green Zone. I would encourage everybody to go see it. And the bottom line is we went in there, we sent our boys and girls, our young men and women, into a combat situation to get weapons of mass destruction. And when they went in these places, they weren't there. So what happened? Watch the Green Zone.
You got it. Let's go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. JD's with us. Go ahead, JD.
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good.
Howdy. I'm one of these independent filmmakers, longtime listener to the program. And I also make music, trying to awaken the masses, you know, to what's going on. And I know Jim Mars is not a loon because I got the pleasure of hanging out with him for about 7 hours last week at a film festival and had some great conversations. And the one thing popped into my head, Jim, when we were hanging out, and I never got a chance to ask you, was about New Schwabenland and the Nazis going down there in Atlantis, you know, possibly being Antarctica and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I just wanted to see what you thought about the veracity of that Admiral Byrd going down there. And
that's been a fascination of mine for a long time, and I'll have to admit it's still in my huff file. Okay, you know, you go, huh, and you file it away, and you wait for further input. But for those of you that are out there that don't really know what the caller is talking about, right before World War II, and actually I cover this in Rise of the Fourth Reich and also in my book, Above Top Secret, the Nazis sent a huge expedition to Antarctica, to what then was called Queen Maud Land, and they put a little swastika flags all the way to the absolute South Pole, and they changed the name to North Schwabenland. And the idea is that they found, excuse me,
sure,
they found areas where there was actually ice-free, and there was water and perhaps even greenery, and that they set up a whole base down there that's gone under various names, and one of them is Agartha. And there are some tantalating evidence that something like that really happened, because I know the admiral, Nazi admiral, over the their sea fleet said, we have prepared a Shangri-La for the Fuhrer. And that leads, of course, to a question of, did Hitler actually commit suicide? It's a whole question. Oh, boy, excuse me.
Well, we've had you up all night. You've been in the rain. You've been in storms. You're probably coming down with pneumonia, for crying out loud.
Probably so. I'll probably be in the hospital tomorrow.
Don't take a vaccine.
In 1947, under Operation High Jump, Admiral Byrd led a military expedition, not a boatload of scientists. They took a whole naval fleet down there, and after suffering some casualties, they suddenly scurried back home. This was a less than 3 months on a mission that was supposed to last 9 months. And on the way back, they stopped at Santiago, Chile, and one of the reporters that was with Operation High Jump filed a story in which he quoted Admiral Byrd as saying, in the next war, we're going to be facing aircraft that, boy, that can travel.
Three more minutes, Jimmy. Hang in there.
They can travel at tremendous speeds from pole to pole. And the reason that it took me so long to track that down is because it was only published in a Chilean newspaper. And, therefore, that's why you can't find it on the internet, because it wasn't in English.
All right, let me take a call. Go get yourself a drink of water here, Jim.
That's
and
what I'm
we're
doing.
Do that, and we're going to take a final phone call here or two. We'll go to Bo in Fort Myers, Florida, on the wild card line. Hey, Bo, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, Bo.
I just actually, it's funny that one of the other callers brought up before this possibility of the war with Iran, and I just found an article today on Fidel Castro.
Castro.
And he actually put out something today saying that there was a, I don't want to sit here and read it to you, but if you go and Google it, he's actually predicting, in a way, sometime this next July, the possible World War III, and it's this whole thing going in, they're going to incite missiles and everything, and I just want to get your take on that, see what you say. And then also,
check out
the Love Police on Google.
Let's get that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're facing all kinds of difficulties. we're getting conflicting reports out of Afghanistan, but the general sense seems to be is that there's no end in sight, there's no win in sight, and, you know, we're kind of bogged down, just like the Russians were. And, of course, now we're facing the possibility of a shooting war with Iran, and the possibility of even nukes being used by either Iran and or Israel. And Israel, we all know, definitely has nuclear weapons. And then, of course, look right here at home. I submit to you that we are facing a ecological 9/11. I am very concerned what's happening with the situation in the Gulf. I hesitate to call it an oil spill because that kind of, again, back to how you manipulate words, that kind of sounds like, oops, we spilled the milk. Well, we'll just clean it up. This is I call it an oil apocalypse going on down there because it seems like that they've actually cracked the ocean floor down there. They're admitting there's more than one plume, which means that they're plan to drill these relief wells probably ain't going to work. And so it's incredible what's going on. And yet, while I was traveling, I kept trying to check the TV as when I could at the airport or wherever. And, George, all I saw for the last few days was about some homicide down in South America with I forgot his name, Van Schlooperman or something like that. And it's a crime. It's a terrible thing. But he's been caught and confessed. And then they're arguing that, well, was he coerced into court?
Well, we're going to continue to watch this, Jim. The name of the book, The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy with Jim Mars. Get some sleep, Jim. Thanks for the work tonight.
All righty. Thank you.
You take care.
Everybody, keep your eyes and ears open.
For Dave Bujinski, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.